Welcome, everyone, to episode 172 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to continue along with our division previews. Today we're going to tackle the Northwest Division. Before we get underway, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're being hosted on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at Almighty Casts. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Brian, I've had the new Spider-Man game in my possession for about 30 hours, and it's lit, dude.
How many of those hours have you been playing it? I'm guessing, like, what's the over-under, 25?
No. Under that, I had to sleep, and besides, I had to share the game with my son, which is frustrating, but yeah. No, it's so good. It's so good. I have a problem. You know me and superheroes. I'm 32 years old, and I'm acting like I'm 7. But I had to. Everyone out there, go get a PS4 and buy the Spider-Man game. It's freaking insane.
It genuinely is that great.
Yeah. We also have a special guest joining us today. We have TJ McBride. He's a Denver Nuggets beat writer from Mile High Sports. TJ, how's it going?
It's good. I have actually been also playing the new Spider-Man game for about 15 hours. So that's literally all that I did last night, finally. Didn't watch any basketball, didn't watch any film, just played obscene amounts of Spider-Man and swung through that city.
Nice. Nice. Adventure's Tower is awesome.
I know, and you can find like Doctor Strange's house or whatever they call that.
Yeah.
The Sanctum or whatever they call it. Like, you can find all kinds of crazy stuff. I love that game. I cannot stop
playing it. And Rand Enterprises from Iron Fist. Like, you have the whole thing just intertwined. I love it. It's so good.
Yeah.
So the joke's on everyone. This is actually a Spider-Man podcast. Sorry, yeah. we lied. We lied. Our bad. No, let's actually go into basketball. Since TJ is a Denver guy, we're going to start with the Denver Nuggets. We have to naturally start with a debate about where Nikola Jokic ranks among the all-time greats, right? I think that's
of course,
tradition. No.
Yeah, it's above like Will, Embiid, Larry surely. Bird, and then Jokic, right? Is that where we're starting this conversation?
Yeah. I think Bird's actually worse, so let's go there.
This is already falling apart, it seems.
Yeah, we're going to save all the terrible Jokic debates for Twitter where they belong and where no one should pay attention to them. I do instead want to talk about the backcourt, though, because I recently wrote a piece for Give Me Sport about them. And TJ, I know you wrote a big thing, a Gary Harris film study, which I thought was excellent. I think this may be a hot take, but I think the backcourt of Murray and Harris may be a top five backcourt in the league, even as early as this season. Maybe it happens like a year or two down the line, but like, you've got Curry and Thompson, Harden and CP3, Dame and CJ, Beal and Wall, and then I don't know who else is there. Like, those two guys are
very
really
muddled
good.
At that point. It really is, and people forget that these two kids are so young. Like, Gary Harris, he's still 23, about to turn 24. Jamal Murray didn't gain the ability to drink in America up until the middle of last year. These two are absurdly young at this point. So the sky's the limit for them. Gary Harris took massive steps with the ball in his hands last year. Jamal Murray is still a streaky shooter, which is not who he is. And last year was his first healthy year since the very, very beginning of his time at Kentucky. So there is a ton of upside still just hiding within this team. And they're putting up 31 points combined together, and they're putting up absurd efficiency numbers, even though they are so young, playing in that death gauntlet that is the Western Conference. And the backcourts that they have to face on a nightly basis are absurd in their own right. So I think that is not a hot take. I think we're past the point of that being a hot take, because the upside is there and the efficiency and production is already there.
Yeah. I think, part of the problem is, as you said, they play in the West, so you have to beat, six of the guys I just mentioned. You also have Russell Westbrook, now DeMar DeRozan. Like, it's tough for them to get an all-star berth, especially this early into their career. I think both of those guys have that upside and, like, probably will be there down the line, but they need some of the older guys to age out first. But, like, yeah, as you said, they're just so damn young. Both of them have made such strides. Harris has gotten better every year. Murray, like, doubled his output last year, basically. Yeah. I mean, as you said, the sky's the limit for these guys. And I think, you know, while I was writing this piece, or like the reason I wanted to write it is because like I don't see that much discussion outside of Denver Twitter about these guys, but I don't know why.
They just have to win before anybody's ever going to give them any kind of breath of, you know, actually speaking about them in any way like this. But this is the year that they can do that. They're doubling down on their strengths. This is not a scenario where they're trying to figure out the defensive philosophies of the team. They're just saying, you know what? We're going to score 115 a night, and we're going to put as many shooters around Nikola Jokic, as many playmakers, as many, like, you know, three-level threats around him as we can possibly put, and we're just going to run with it and see what happens. And that's why this year could be the year that you see finally everybody start to realize the talent that is in Denver, because they're just going to go out there and just flamethrow teams. And it's going to be interesting to see how that dichotomy works, because when's the last time a team that was trying to fight for a playoff position just said, I'm not playing defense, other than LeBron James-led regular season teams, you know? Of course, you're going to have those superstar teams who just don't play defense in the regular season. The Cavs couldn't do it in the playoffs last year, but this is the first time that a middling, you know, up-and-coming team is just going to double down on their offensive strengths and see if it can work in this day and age of basketball. And I think you're going to see just stupid production numbers from each of them. I wouldn't be surprised if both of them were 20-point-per-game scorers this year, just because they were already only 3-4 points away. When you're adding more and more easy three-point looks, more and more open cuts to the rim, there's just so many opportunities to get those easy looks at the basket, and they both could just jump into that echelon of top backcourts in basketball. That's not crazy to me at all anymore.
Yeah, I mean, Mort and I, we did a league pass rankings recently, and both he and I have the Nuggets as our number one team for the reason you said. I mean, it's these games are just going to be a track meet every night where it's like the first to 130 wins. Like, fantasy basketball owners out there, you want all of the shares of any Nuggets you can get this year.
Yes.
Just because, like, as you said, their defense is probably not going to be... You know, I don't think it'll be the worst.
It's going to be terrible. It's going to be bottom five. I'm completely prepared for that. Like, in a realistic sense, that's just what it is for me.
Yeah. I guess, what were they last year? Like, 26th? Is that right?
I think they were 26th or 27th. Yeah, I don't remember. Yeah. I hate looking at that number. It's just sad. But they didn't play aggressive defense at the start of last year. Like, Michael Malone is a very conservative defensive coach. He wants to drop his big. He wants to force you to get into mid-range looks. He wants to make you work. He doesn't want to gun for steals and end up playing 4-on-5 behind it. This year, I have a very strong suspicion that's going to change. They're just going to be getting out and trying to poke every ball away, get into every passing lane, try and really force that transition opportunities, and that could help them defensively, only because you are adding so many offensive possessions that would normally be offensive possessions for the opposing team. I think that there's going to be a little bit of a spike, especially fantasy-wise, like you said, of just guys who were just gobbling up steals and getting out on the break. I think that that's going to be an interesting part of this conversation, too.
Yeah, totally agree. Mort, the one, I don't even know if it's a concern necessarily, but the one, you know, I feel very confident about their backcourt. I feel great about Jokic. I feel great about Millsap. The three spot is like, if there is a potential hole in this team, it's that, just because, you know, Wilson Chandler was not great last year. He had a really good season the year prior, but was, you know, struggled a bit last year. They traded him. They re-signed Will Barton. Now he's going to be the starting small forward. How do you see that working out? Are you concerned at all about, like, maybe Barton is just better in a six-man role and they're going to miss him in that capacity? And, like, there may be some struggle to figure out, like, the division of touches between Jokic, him, and the backcourt?
No.
The weird part of this is that Wilson Chandler was the fifth option last year, and that was a role that he was willing to take in. He was going to be a ball mover. He wasn't going to be getting lots of shots. He understood that. Will Barton likes to shoot. That's not crazy, and that's something that he does want to do. But I don't think this is going to be a scenario where there's a pull for touches at that point, because this is what's so weird about the Nuggets offense. Nikola Jokic will get you easy looks. Even Wilson Chandler had 26-point games last year where he just got easy looks over and over and over again. The one part that is going to be interesting to losing Wilson Chandler is that he was kind of the catalyst to put any semblance of a defensive lineup on the floor, because he could defend three to four different positions, but again, was he really going to slow the Kevin Durants of the world? Was he really going to slow any of the top tier small forwards? I don't think so. He was better off as a power forward. He was. Mm-hmm. He should not have been playing small forward as much as he did, in my opinion. It was just the roster called for it. So I'm not as worried about it. And then I actually went up and looked up the net rating for the starters with Will Barton and not Wilson Chandler. They're like mm-hmm. a plus 32.7 per 100 possessions over like 100 minutes. Like, it's absurd how talented they are. I mean, you have, at that point, if you have Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Will Barton, Paul Millsap, and Nikola Jokic, you have guys who can shoot the three, who can play make off the dribble, who can keep the ball moving, who can attack in isolation on their own. They can all do anything from that triple threat position. There is no one singular way to defend them. There just isn't at that point, because you're getting teams scrambling, you're attacking closeouts, you're making the extra pass, and there's always going to be an open shot. So while, yes, I do think that there was a valid reason for Will Barton to be in that six-man role, that volume scoring role, just off the bench, just go be a gunner, I think he can be the guy who just fits into this offensive system like a plug-and-play kind of format and just goes. I would not be surprised if they are significantly more fluid when they do have Will Barton in that lineup than with Wilson Chandler. People forget, Wilson Chandler is the first player since Dennis Rodman to play over 40 minutes and not score a point, and that was in the play-in game against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Like, they need something from that small forward spot, and Will Barton can give it to him, and he's as close as anybody to Gary Harris and Jamal Murray. They are all, those three are very, very, very close. So if you want to talk about the maturation of this backcourt, like we were earlier, Will Barton being that small forward will continually help facilitate that exact thought process as well. So I cannot be more excited for Will Barton to be in the starting lineup. And you're not losing the fire off the bench because you got Isaiah Thomas on a veteran minimum deal. You can just let him go gun off the bench. You can just let him run wild. I'm not worried about that anymore. And Mason Plumlee is the perfect pick and roll partner for him. I'm very much so looking forward to how this roster suddenly just looks deep, because they weren't deep last year at all. But now you can really beat up bench units.
Right. And yeah, I know Mort is especially high on Trey Lyles as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm with you there. You know that. We've talked about that on Twitter before. I think Trey Lyles could really be a guy who steps in and be a 13-point-per-game scorer off the bench this year and spreads the floor for Isaiah Thomas and is able to attack closeouts and show his vision and his ability to attack off the bounce, because that's when he's at his best. His best trait is probably his shooting, but he's at his best when he can attack closeouts and show off his athleticism, get to the rim, and play make a little bit.
Yep. I agree entirely with all your points, which is why I'm feeling pretty confident about my scorching hot take that I told you about earlier. I didn't go into specific details. So let me just introduce this a little bit. So obviously, we're looking at the Golden State Warriors right now being the best team in the league. We're looking at LeBron being the best player in the league. That will change in the coming years. You know, someone will have to step up to that mantle in both those scenarios. As far as I'm concerned, I think Giannis is going to be the king of the league for a good 5 to 7 years. Very soon. I think he's going to be the guy that is just looked upon as the undoubtedly best player in the NBA. Now, when it comes to the best team, I think that could be the Nuggets. And I think that could be fairly soon, within the next 3 or 4 years. Because we're looking at a team that is, on a foundational level, so unselfish and doesn't have this problem of, oh, I need to get X amount of shots. There's a fluidity towards their offensive game plan that is very tailored to how championship teams are run, if you look past like the Detroit Pistons teams.
Yeah.
But they're very much in terms of, we want to share the ball, like the extra pass, the better shot is prioritized, which is very in much in line with those who have won championships. And at the same time, they're also not lacking in talent. Like, Nikola Jokic is going to be an MVP candidate at some point. Gary Harris is going to be one of the best two-way players in the NBA. Jamal Murray is going to be, you know, the new era type point guard, because with the league having seen so many players who've come in who can do virtually everything on the court, you know, centers, power forwards, small forwards, whatever, the need for a ball-dominant point guard is just minimized. It's no longer there. And Jamal Murray just fits into that role perfectly. Even though he can handle, he can initiate the offense if need be, he doesn't need to. That's also, you know, side note, that's why I fucking hate the entire backlash against Gary Harris's, you know, somewhat minor production on the rebounds and the assist numbers. Like, no, it doesn't matter. Like, people look at those numbers. Yeah. like, oh, he's not a good rebounder, he's not a good passer. No, that's not true. That's not how it is. This is by design. Like, he's still one of the most influential players on the Nuggets, the most essential perimeter player at this point. Now, and let's go back to Will Barton. He's just 27, so he's still got a lot of game left. And he's an underrated all-around player. This guy could easily be like a 15-5-5 player who participates defensively, can run in transition, can spot up a three. And while I get the idea that, power hungry or shot hungry off the bench, like being that gunner could be attractive, he doesn't need to be that type of guy. I mean, he doesn't easily want to play. Be. And I don't, I've seen nothing from him that indicates that he has to be that guy. And I think Trey Lyles ultimately is going to be the starting power forward after Millsap's deal is over. And Lyles, again, is one of those guys who needs shots in not in a ball-dominant fashion. Like, he'll spot up. He'll take these, the close-out drives. Like, he will do things that isn't ball-dominant. When you really look at the Denver Nuggets, you have a team of so many guys who can produce without pounding the ball for 15 seconds. All of them can shoot. All of them can make pinpoint decisions. And that is a wonderful recipe for an elite offense, which takes you very far in today's NBA. So for me, it's all about how does that defense improve over the next couple of years to become clear NBA champion favorites. I think it will happen internally to some degree. I think they will find some external factors as well, like some additions. I've always loved the idea of David Nwaba on the Nuggets, and apparently he could be had for 1.5 mil. Yeah, it would make sense. Would have made sense. 1.5 mil. I mean, look, those type of guys are out there. They can do stuff. I'm looking at the Nuggets as being the heir to the Golden State Warriors, ultimately. I think within the next 5 years, and here's my hot take, within the next 5 years, we'll see an NBA Finals matchup between Denver and Milwaukee.
Ooh.
That is a hot take. That is a scalding, vicious, like, cannot feel my skin anymore kind of hot take for sure.
Absolutely.
But I think the part of this that isn't discussed enough because of the strangeness surrounding it is Michael Porter Jr. We have literally no idea. He could be a 25-5-5 guy with ridiculously long defense, even if he's not willing to be a lockdown guy. You add a player like that at small forward next to Nikola Jokic, someone who, by the way, when he came into his press conference, is taller than Nikola Jokic. The dude is just the perfect fit at that point. You want to talk about raising that ceiling to a point to where you can contend, to where you can bang with the biggest and baddest teams in the entire league. That's how you do it. And the one last part, you want Trey Lyles to be the starting power forward when Millsap goes away. People are not talking enough about Jared Vanderbilt, and I will die this island.
Yeah.
All right, this dude is Lamar Odom with better rebounding efficiency. He can produce out of the pick and roll. He broke metrics. Like, talking to Tim Connolly, the Nuggets president of basketball operations, he said that he broke their rebounding metric. Like, they did not have any comparison for what he did at Kentucky. And even if you go back to his time in the EYBL League and things like that, he was putting up throughout his entire career from, like, basically high school until after Kentucky, like, almost 16 rebounds per 36 minutes. Absurd numbers. There is so much talent hiding within, like, the little fringes of this roster that haven't even come to fruition in any capacity yet. There is a real scenario in which this team takes off. And my question to you guys is, can this offensive format function in the playoffs? Because if you ask me, they are going to tire defenses out in the half court in a playoff setting. If you're going to run through every single screen that they're going to send you through, if you're going to have to play up and away with Nikola Jokic at the high post, you are going to exhaust teams. And I think that there is a playoff value to how they play, which is something that the Nuggets have never had as a franchise when they've been trying to create these contending teams. I think that's really going to be what changes things in Denver and makes them competitors.
I think it's perfectly valid to look at the playoffs and look at that offense and go, yeah, it is transferable. Like, we know, we've seen teams that rely heavily on the three ball go cold, like, the Houston Rockets, what they missed, what, 27
straight
threes? 27, right? Yeah. Right. And the thing with the Nuggets is, like, they will take a lot of threes, but that's not their only weapon. Like, they don't necessarily have to go, all three ball all the time. Like, they have Jokic you can dump the ball into. I know, you know, hashtag let's, you know, fuck the low post offense, but it does carry some advantages.
It does.
And very much like Golden State, they don't turn down wide open mid-range shots. Like, if that shot presents itself, they're going to take it as they should, which is going to squeeze out points. Now, the fact that they also have a very great cutting offense with players just knowing how to move off the ball, that is something that just kills teams in the playoffs. Like,
and that's rare, too.
Right. Yeah, it is. Like, Golden State, I mean, look at them. They perfected it. I don't see any reason as to why Denver couldn't copy that or even exceed it to some extent, because they have world-class cutters on that team. Gary Harris in particular, and Jamal Murray is going to be an absolute beast in that sense as well. Like, right now, he's one of those mostly perimeter scorers, but he's actually sneaky bulky and strong and athletic as well. Yeah,
he could have been an NFL receiver. He has come out and said that he was better at football than basketball, and he could have been a 6'4", 220-pound, like, ex-receiver with big, strong hands. So when you watch, and like you said earlier with his rebounding and assist numbers, because of how good he is running the break and getting out in transition and using that soft hands, they just have him leak. We're going to send four guys and to go get this board. We're going to send Gary to the other side of the floor. They have been doing that forever, which is why you see his rebounding numbers at 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. You have to face guard Gary Harris. You have to face guard Jamal Murray. And when that happens, you have the dunker spot wide open because you're forcing the weak side help from that spot. So you always have a dump-off pass. Or if you fall back, then Jokic has the easy mid-range shot. There's just no way to defend this team. Like, whenever I have these conversations, it just blows my mind because there just isn't a way to defend this team. You just have to hope they miss.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and that's what the thing I like about the construction of this team is, like, they know not only is Jokic obviously a great passer, but Millsap is too.
Yes.
So you know how you guys were talking about earlier, like, yeah, you know, Gary Harris and Jamal Murray, they don't get an overwhelming number of rebounds or assists. They're not going to put up triple-doubles like Westbrook, but that's good. Like, you're... When you have these front court guys who can pass like that, you don't need a ball dominant point guard. Like, I remember going into last preseason, Murray still hadn't won the starting point guard job, and he was competing with Moutier, who is a terrible shooter and a ball dominant guy, and he turned the ball over constantly. Like, he is the antithesis of who you want next to Jokic. And so when Murray won that job, and, you know, he started a little bit slow, but then he, like, really caught fire pretty quickly and just never looked back. Like, now they just realize we need spot-up shooters next to Jokic. Mm-hmm. Like, we can run the offense through Jokic. You can have, and as you know, with Will Barton now, too, as you said, like, he is better on ball than Wilson Chandler is last year. So now you've got really five guys who can do everything. They can handle, they can pass, they can shoot. Yep. As you said, like, that makes them indefensible. It's like what the Warriors have had, you know, like that's what makes the Warriors so dangerous too, is all of their guys can do everything, so there is no good game plan. Now, you don't have a Stephen Curry and a Klay Thompson and a Kevin Durant on this team, but, like, as you know, all of these guys except for Millsap are young enough that you can reasonably expect them to continue to improve.
And it's not just the starting unit. Isaiah Thomas is a triple threat guy. Mason Plumlee can't shoot that well, but he's one of the better playmaking centers in basketball. We've already talked about Trey Lyles being able to create in the way that he does. And then Torrey Craig, who's very underrated and will have a bigger role this year because he's not on a two-way, he averaged 3 assists a game in the G League as a wing. Like, these are, like, you, it's unrelenting. Like, even when you have the, like, 7th, 8th guy come off the bench, you still can't just defend them in one singular way. It's going to be unrelenting, and they're going to just punish teams repeatedly, and I cannot wait to see what that actually turns into.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a reason we had this team ranked first in our league best rankings. Like, everyone, I know the Nuggets are not, like, the most nationally, like, sexy team, but they should be. Everyone should really watch this team this year. They're going to be super, super fun, even if you don't have any emotional investment. You're not a Denver fan, whatever. If you enjoy basketball, if you enjoy points being scored, watch Nuggets this year.
Yes. Do you guys have, like a win-loss total for them yet? Do you guys have, like, a rankings that you guys have brought out?
We have not yet. We're going to do that after we get through all of our division previews. We'll do, like, a season-long kind of where we expect which teams.
Going to be high, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going to be high. Yeah.
I'm holding strong at 50 wins already. Like, I believe in this team.
Yeah. I think... Like, I would put them somewhere in the, like, 4 or 5 range in the Western Conference, depending on...
Well, Brian, we did the over-under.
That's
where,
true.
Where did we land on the Nuggets?
Because they're at 47.5.
Oh, yeah, we went over there. Yeah, for sure over. Yeah.
Let's move on to the Thunder, who had quite an interesting
There's a lot to talk about here.
Yeah. So the first question, Mort, I'm going to throw this to you. They lost Carmelo Anthony. Do you think that's actually going to be addition by subtraction?
To some degree. I mean, look, I still feel that they need a little bit more offensive punch. I know that you're absolutely in love with him and your boner is still strong, but you know, their defense is going to be absolutely awesome. I don't disagree with you on that, but I do think they need some sort of offensive punch here that Melo did provide. Like, we crapped on Melo a lot, but the dude still buried 16 points a game and was still, you know, what was he, 150 plus three-pointers as well? Like, he was an outside threat. You know, losing that is going to hurt your offense. Defensively, however, they're going to win in that department by leaps and bounds, just by giving those minutes to Jeremy Grant, who is just that much more active, both on the glass and in transition and all that. I just wonder if they can replace it. You know, I know they got Dennis Schroeder in, but I'm very skeptical of Dennis overall, as you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if that's enough. But ultimately, I think it's difficult to say if it's, you know, if it's an addition by subtraction, because when you look at the whole makeup of the team, it just changed so drastically.
Right.
That I think it's incomparable.
Yeah. I think defensively, as you said, it will be, just because you're putting Jeremy Grant and Patrick Patterson in those minutes. But
yeah,
offensively, you're right. He had his worst year offensively, I think, ever, or at least since his rookie year. But like,
ever.
Yeah. It's still, as you said, it's still 16 points a game. So that does lead into, well, they got Dennis Schroeder as his, you know, in the trade for him. Dennis Schroeder was not hyper efficient in Atlanta last year, but like, he proved on a high enough volume he could score 20 points a game. So TJ, what do you expect from Schroeder in OKC this year?
It's not even Schroeder that I look at. It's the fact that Russell Westbrook is going to play with another point guard. That's what is so important to me about this, because when you have Russell Westbrook spotting up off ball and attacking closeouts, nobody can stop him. Like, he's a cheat code off ball when he actually decides to buy into it. So for me, when I can't remember who put the tweet out, but someone put the net rating of Russell Westbrook alongside every point guard that they've had when they've played together, and the lowest one was like plus 9.1 with Raymond Felton, who's awful. Like, the fact that he is going to get somebody else to take the ball handling pressure off of him and allow him to do other things, I think will make up for a lot of the offensive issues that they lost out by losing Melo. And the thing is, for me, this allows Paul George to finally do whatever Paul George wants to do on this court. This is, you're not going to have a guy where you swing, all of a sudden Melo's jab-stepping 6 times and taking an 18-footer. Like, that's not going to happen anymore. Paul George is a low-key kind of guy that I'm looking at that could have an MVP-type season if they decide to actually make noise in the Western Conference this year and things work out the way they should. I would not be surprised if you see him going out there shooting 40% from three like he did last year on even more volume, because he took 7.7 threes a game last year. I take back the higher volume part of that, but I believe that they're going to get enough offensive stimulation from having two point guards out there with Russell Westbrook in that way to be able to mitigate that. And like you said, defensively, this team is just going to be absurd. Jeremy Grant providing weak side rim protection while you have Stephen Adams just stalemating whoever you want. And then Paul George and Andre Roberson and Patrick Patterson. Terrence Ferguson, who was quietly a strong defender last year for no reason. Alex Abrines still has length. They have wings. They could really make noise defensively and just drive teams mad on that end of the floor. I believe in this team. They're the team that I have winning the Northwest Division, personally.
Wow. There we go. More people. See, I am...
I'm there.
I'm all in on this team as well. Because I you're right. I mean, like, the offense is the bigger concern of anything, but, like, defensively, I just don't see how they don't have a top three defense this year. Because, like, they also have Nerlens off the bench. And, like, You know, Nerlens did not have
Nerlens
got to
prove something for me. I'm not touching Nerlens with a 10-foot pole until he decides to play basketball again. Like, I just don't see it.
I agree. Yeah, like, the Dallas thing was not great. But, like, he's on a one-year deal. He's going to have to be on his best behavior. He's going to be in a limited role. I have faith. You know, if they were trotting him out as, like, a 35-minute-a-game starter, I would not be super excited about this team. But, like, in a limited role. And that, really, that's my question about the Thunder team. Like, as you said, TJ, if everything goes right, like, there's an argument that this could be the second best team in the West. But you have, really, it's Schroeder and Nerlens, and it's the same question with Carmelo last year. Like, will you buy in to the role this team needs you to play? And it's, I guess, to some extent, you can ask that about Westbrook, too. You know, you're talking about this dual point guard lineup. Like, Westbrook, will you accept playing off ball at times? Or are you just going to...
The numbers just put it out there for me. Like, seeing those numbers, seeing that he was at least a plus 9.1 with all of these just atrocious point guards, like, he was a positive net rating with Samaj Christian next to him. Like, I don't know how, but for some reason it just works. And I'm a very analytically based person. When I see for 3.5 years, when we're talking about, you know, Westbrook averaging a triple double and he's still putting up this efficiency along these guys, I believe in that. I do. And maybe it's fool's gold. I don't know yet. But I just believe in it. And I do think the argument for Dennis Schroeder is an interesting one. Is he going to buy in? I think Russell Westbrook will just beat the shit out of him if he doesn't. Him and Melo were friends. Schroeder and him are not friends. Like, this is not a thing where they have prior, you know, connections to each other. I think that'll be different. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer had an article the other day where he was talking about lineups that we should all be excited to see this season. And he was talking about this dual point guard thing with Schroeder and Westbrook, and will Westbrook get to play off the ball? And it's, yeah, I mean, I agree that, like, of the two, Westbrook, you know, he's got his big contract. He's, like, secure about his place in the NBA. Schroeder's signed for a couple more years, so he doesn't have to worry about, you know, stat padding quite yet. And, like, really, he probably needs to be on his best behavior, too, because he just got salary dumped for Carmelo Anthony, which is not...
Yes.
A great sign for your future in the
NBA.
When
you are said that you are worse in the locker room than Dwight Howard, you have a lot of room to make up suddenly.
Right. So he's definitely got to do, like, some rehab. But, it, you know, again, it's like he played such a big role on that Atlanta team. And that Atlanta team sucked. But, like, he's still young enough where I do worry that, like, maybe he just wants to, you know, it goes to his head that, like, I should be a starting point guard. I'm not willing to accept a six-man role. Like, if he does... I think this team, you know, the ceiling of this team goes up exponentially, but it's just like you do have to worry about those intangible factors of, like, do these guys buy into the role they need to play? But I'm with you on the Paul George point, especially. Like, I think not having Melo there, there's just going to be less of this, like, there's always just some deference. Like, these guys just never quite played their game, and, like, they kept there, you know, there were so many articles last year about Westbrook especially where, like, the other two guys were like, just be yourself, dude, and he's like, well, but you guys gotta get touches too. So I think, you know, taking away Melo to some extent will help that. Like, Paul George can just be Paul George again, I would hope. But it comes down to, a lot of this season comes down to Schroeder, which is not a thing that you necessarily want to say if you're OKC.
When you phrase it like that, I'm much more nervous suddenly about what I was saying than what I was. Just, like, the optics of it depends on Schroeder is so terrible for me.
Right, exactly. Well, speaking of teams that I'm now nervous for, let's go to the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Oh, man.
Mort, I'm going to lean on you heavily for this one because it's really just the Chicago Bulls of the early 2010s. And really, I mean, we have to start with before we even get into the on-court stuff, there have been multiple reports this summer. The two most notable ones, I think, are from Joe Cowley of the Chicago Sun-Times and then Sean Devaney of Sporting News, both kind of just hinting at some tension behind the scenes. Jimmy Butler doesn't seem to like Andrew Wiggins. Karl Towns may not like Jimmy Butler. It seems like their big three all kind of just hates each other. So do you think there's a risk of this team just completely imploding this year?
Well, what's the big three here? Is Andrew Wiggins a part of the big three?
Yeah, that really was a hard there? Thing for me to swallow. Yeah.
Contractually, like, yes.
Contractually, yeah, sure. I mean, okay. So here's the. I mean, I've been talking about this a lot. I don't know where to stand on this because on one hand, I totally get where Tibbs and Jimmy is coming from in terms of wanting, you know, this more hard work being put into the young guys like in Towns and Wiggins. But at the same time, I can also see, like, it's tiring for young guys just listening to these old dudes all the fucking time because that is unbearable at a certain point. They really just need to come together in some capacity. It's a problem when you negotiate a new deal with Andrew Wiggins and you have to have your owner, like, ask him, are you going to promise to get better?
Yeah.
That's not a good thing. And now Towns is like, oh, I might be signing a shorter-term deal. And honestly, it's like he's the guy you had to keep, but you're also concerned because he hasn't taken these steps that you would thought he would be. Like, remember when he was drafted, he was like, oh, this is the next coming. He's a two-way player. He's going to be great defensively right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And he's been horrible, mostly because he just hasn't put in the work on that end. He is an offensive-minded player, which has tremendous value, but certainly also its shortcomings. So I get that the frustration level from both Tibbs and Jimmy Butler in this regard, but they have to be more proactive about it instead of just, you know, jabbing to the media or you know, being malicious about it, which I know Jimmy can be. I mean, look, the Chicago kids were also pissed at Jimmy and Dwayne Wade.
Right.
But that's because Jimmy is like a fully blown vet now. Like, he's no longer this under the radar young guy. Like, he's a vet. He expects people to come in prepared, work their asses off because look where he came from. Mm-hmm. And that is just going to spout a whole lot of problems from guys who were selected first overall and is coming in with this, oh, but I'm going to be a Hall of Famer regardless. And, like, what side do you fall on here? Like, who do you root for in this thing? And it's difficult. I think they need to find common ground. And I know you actually have a point in this, you know, a whole section dedicated to this, but I'm going to talk about Luol Deng right off the bat.
Okay, yeah.
Because Luol Deng is rumored to be a Timberwolf, obviously. And people are laughing at that signing, like, oh, Tibbs is bringing back the Timberwolves, ha ha ha. But here's the thing, what people forget about Luol Deng. Luol Deng may have been a top 25 teammate in the history of the NBA. Luol Deng was just fan-fucking-tastic at talking to young guys, including Jimmy Butler when he was a kid. Just taking his arm around young guys and guiding them and helping them, not just regarding basketball, but off the court stuff, like just preparing them as human beings. If there's a guy out there who can sort of maybe bridge that gap between Tibbs and Jimmy Butler, or the bridge that's called Tibbs and Jimmy Butler, and the other side of the bridge that's called, you know, Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, it might be Luol Deng. Because Tibbs right now is trying to arm himself with former Bulls guys who put in the work. Like, if Joakim Noah's bought out, he's also going to be joining in.
Right.
All those guys had the same philosophy. We're going to work our asses off we worked our asses off to get where we ended up, like being all-stars and all these things. Mm-hmm. So I think what Tibbs is trying to do is kind of prove to these young kids that, look at what we did. Let's have these guys come in every single day, work their butt off in practice, because they know we all know that they will. And if we see from you guys, like Towns and Wiggins, that you're not going to respond to that, then we have to make some sort of arrangement, because that cannot be a thing. And for, look, Towns, you would get a bad rep all around the league if you didn't work his ass off in practice, if when everyone else did as well. There are a lot of factors going into this summer, a lot of them. But my big hope is Luol Deng will be the big ass savior, basically. That's what it comes down to, which is frightening.
Yes,
in and of itself.
Yeah. That sounds like the whole the Thunder's season like revolves around Dennis Schroeder's kind of
right.
levels of bad right there. I am so terrified of this team. I have very little faith in any of this bridging that you're talking about happening.
I get
that. How many players who are as talented as Karl-Anthony Towns and are as wanted and people understand that he's a 24-12 guy for the rest of his career, mm-hmm. who is going to take a shorter second contract. This is like the first big payday. How does anybody ever think that that's a good idea? He must be unhappy enough to be like, I just want to be out in 2 years. Or at least be thinking that he may want to. That should send shivers down every single Timberwolves fan's neck. That is terrifying to me. And talking about Andrew Wiggins, what are you going to do with that contract? Like, if this doesn't get better, you're just on the hook. Like, that's that. You're not moving that deal without giving up a lot in addition to that deal. I have very little faith in this functioning the correct way, and I can see a absolute disastrous befalling of this organization if there ends up being a Jimmy Butler, Karl Anthony Towns rift and they have to choose. Because Butler has been known to be a guy who does not want to mess around. He's been a part of the two worst big threes ever in Rondo, Wade, and him, and then Wiggins, Towns, and him. Like, the poor dude is just like, he's ready to win, and... Yeah. Tibbs wants him. Tibbs loves him. I don't know if there is not a scenario in which they decide, you know what, let's try and keep Butler and see what we can get for a guy like Towns. Like, that scenario doesn't seem outlandish to me, and that's terrifying. I have so little faith in this going correctly. Like, Frozen Hell is Frozen Hell for a reason, right? Like, they have branded their fan base around this. Like, I just don't believe in this going correctly. I just don't.
Yeah. I'm like hoping they would remove Tibbs from the front office before he has a chance to get rid of Towns, because like to me.
Yeah, but Glenn Taylor is giving $148 million out to Wiggins. Like, do we have that much faith in these guys?
No, absolutely not. And I mean, like, Mort, you said it, and like both of you guys said it. These are like, Tibbs is loyal to his Bulls guys. So like, yeah, I could see a scenario in which they choose Butler over Towns. That's the completely wrong choice. Like,
yes, it
Butler, is. Butler might be a better player than Towns is right now, but Butler is also, what, like 7 or 8 years older, has Tibbs mileage on his knees for his entire career, basically.
And a bad meniscus.
Right. Like, if you're looking, you gotta look long term here. Like, you're not winning the title right now. Butler is very much in his prime, and he's going to be exiting it soon. Towns is still years away from his prime, and I know there are the concerns about his defense, and, you know, maybe behind the scenes there are concerns about his work ethic. At least that's what seems to be driving this tension between Butler and Towns.
Right.
I don't care. Like, he's still so young. As you said, Mort, like, when he came out, he was supposed to be the next Anthony Davis. And, like, no, he's not making that type of impact defensively. But, you know, we're talking about all these new unicorns. Like, he's right up there. He still has so much time to get better. Yes, he is. And bigs,
absolutely.
You know, bigs defensively, it often takes a couple years for them to get just acclimated to the way the NBA works. He's not Jahlil Okafor on defense. Like, he's not completely hopeless. He has the tools to get there. It's just, like, he's not great yet. But this is not a type of player you give up on. So, like, yeah, you know, I've been wondering all summer, like, when Anthony Davis was up for his contract, or his extension, he signed July 1st, 12:01 a.m. And there was like a whole big deal about it. It seemed weird to me that we're now 2 months into free agency, or more than 2 months in, and 2 months into when Towns could have signed his extension, and he still hasn't. So yeah, like, now hearing this report that, you know, he might just be sending a message, like, maybe he does end up signing the 5-year extension, and that's fine, and like, everything's hunky-dory eventually, but like, it's weird that he hasn't signed it yet. This is not how things go for a number one overall pick who's shown that type of upside that doesn't have, you know, like, Embiid didn't sign his until closer to the season, but like, Embiid had played 31 games until that point.
Yeah, and they had so much weird contractual verbiage about his injury and stuff. There was just a lot more strangeness around it.
Right. Like, there shouldn't, this should be like a cut and dry. There shouldn't have been like, Glenn Taylor should not have had to meet with Towns like he did with Wiggins and be like, you promise you're going to get better? It should have been like, here is a 5-year max extension, July 1st. We're not going to, like, just take it. Like, it's cut and dry. So, yeah, I mean, TJ, you said it well. Like, going back to our over-unders, I forget when Minnesota's was. I think it's in, like, the 45-46 range. And, Mort, I think both you and I took the under just because we're so scared of, like, this team. If things go south for this team, I don't see any way that Jimmy – like, I mean, like, they should trade Jimmy Butler by midseason, because I think he's going to leave after this year. I don't think they will trade him because he's a Tibbs guy. But, like, this team could just completely collapse.
I think that's the holdup on the Towns extension. I think right now the reason he hasn't signed it is because he's asking the club to trade Jimmy.
Mm.
Like, I think he's holding the club hostage at this point. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, him just going full-blown, I'll sign it as soon as Jimmy is traded.
Mm-hmm.
His days are numbered on that. It's an extension. He's got to get it done by a certain time. So
yeah, exactly.
Like October, mid-October.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Month and a half.
First day of the season. I think it's the 14th or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so just over a month. So yeah. The clock is ticking. Yeah.
Oh my god.
So where would you guys want to see Butler traded to? Where can the Wolves get enough back, and who could benefit enough from it?
So. I was going to circle back to this when we get to Portland, but to me, Portland's one place where, you know, I'm writing something right now about them for Gimme Sport, about, like, how they're not, they don't seem to be in a rush to break up Dame and CJ. I don't think they should be. I think there are moves they can make, and we'll get into that later. But I think if you are going to break apart those guys, it should be for a situation like what we saw with Kyrie or Kawhi, where like a superstar demands out and your team loses leverage. And this is what's going to happen with Jimmy too. So do you weigh something where you trade CJ for Jimmy? And like, yeah, I know.
Ooh. It makes sense. On paper, it all makes sense. Like, I do see what you're saying for sure. I just don't know if Portland would be willing. That's a tough pill to swallow because they've branded around that backcourt. Like, those guys are close friends. And Damian Lillard's already, like, there's been enough unrest to where he had to meet with ownership just to be able to feel comfortable with the potential outlook of this team. Mm-hmm. If you trade his best friend off the team, man, like, you're looking at potential implosion there as well, which we'll get to them. I have a lot of thoughts on Portland. Oh, I got a lot of thoughts on Portland. But it's a tough one.
Yeah. They're in a really tough spot. But to me, they jump out as a team where, like, that's enough of a return. Like, you know, I think the problem is, A, there are just so many guys who are about to become free agents that do you swap, like, a 2019 free agent for a 2019 free agent and just, you know, hope that's enough? Or do you, like, it's so tough for the Timberwolves because, like, there aren't many guys, I don't think. I can't think of any off the top, or many off the top of my head, where it makes sense to, like, you know, sure. No. It could be like the Lakers, I guess. Like, if they're not confident,
I was
Kawhi's
thinking
coming.
LA too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was curious.
Yeah, but for who though?
Ingram.
On the Lakers, you're talking
something.
Ingram, yeah. Hart and a pick.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Hmm.
I wonder if Toronto could make a run, man.
Oh my god.
Now we're back to the whole Butler Kawhi. Yeah, that's my wet dream. Yeah. My wet dream is Jimmy Butler and Kawhi Leonard on the same team. So I would love for that. Ironically, Denver has enough assets. I'm not saying he should go there, but they do.
This is a very common talking point for sure.
Yeah.
Obviously, like, I'm not saying he would fit there. I don't even, like, he's pretty ball dominant. Don't get me wrong. He loves to share the ball. He's a great passer, so he would probably be able to incorporate himself well in Denver, even though it would take some time. But I kind of dig what Denver is doing on the long term, and that meniscus, man, scares the living shit out of me when it comes to Jimmy.
And he would have less pressure on him in Denver, like you said. Like, he wouldn't have to be the guy suddenly. Like, he doesn't have to literally go save his team on a nightly basis. As someone who watched Jimmy Butler single-handedly beat the Nuggets twice last year, just dragging a corpse of that Wolves team to a victory, he wouldn't have to do that. Like, that wouldn't be part of this anymore. I don't know. I think the Jimmy Butler in Denver thing's interesting because then you start looking long-term. If you can keep Jimmy in Denver and you pair him with Michael Porter Jr. at the 4 and Nikola Jokic at the 5, That's some serious firepower,
that
switchability, versatility. Yep. It's interesting.
What really bothers me in this is really that Jimmy has not landed a place where his strengths are really maximized. Look at this dude. He's going to potentially risk ending up as one of those guys who are going to be viewed as less than he actually is. Like, he is insanely good. Like, to me, an obvious talent-level MVP candidate when he gets, like, to the right place. He is so damn good. But right now, there's this whole narrative around him. Like, Brian, you mentioned it. Like, the Tibbs knees.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the whole minutes being drained from his career. And then you add the meniscus thing So I think a lot of teams are looking at him like, oh, there's a clear expiration date. Mm-hmm. But when is that in? Like, we don't know what that date is. Is it in 5 years? Is it in 2 years? Yeah. Like, if it's in 2 years, like, then he's also going to see a limited return in free agency next year, because then teams are going to be scared off handing him a full max, even though right now, like, he's clearly, like, if his production keeps at that same level, he's clearly worth it. But, oh, man, he's just such a tough player to gauge right now because of the tips factor, because of the meniscus, because of the way that he plays in terms of he's not being, like, a traditional three-point shooter as well. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just, he's weird. He's excellent weird. He's still my favorite player, but he's weird.
Oh, you know who I should have mentioned as a potential Jimmy? Philly. Right.
Oh, yep. I'd love
Philly's
that.
The one. Philly's the one, man. And they have the money to be able to make it work, too. Like, you just send J.J. Redick or whatever back. Like, you could make the money work. Right. That's I've always thought that was a great spot for him. I'm curious if they can do that. And I wouldn't be surprised if Cleveland decided to make a run at him just for fun. Like, I would not be surprised if Gilbert was like, let's grab that 8 seed. He'd be great for Colin Sexton. Let's just see what happens. Like, that would not surprise me whatsoever.
Right.
Totally. Ironically, the Bulls need a 3.
Yeah, there you go.
If the Bulls traded for Butler, I would just quit. I would leave. I'd be like, I'm not doing this anymore. I don't understand basketball. I don't know how this works.
Look, the Bulls, like, Stephen Noe from The Athletic had a great tweet last night. It's like, the Bulls matched a $78 million offer sheet for Zach LaVine, but let David Nwaba go for $1.5 million. Like, that's peak.
It's Gar Pax, man. He said, we're already there. We know
I'm
what
just
this
saying,
is.
Nothing is impossible when the Bulls are involved. And he would just make so much. I would love him back in Chicago, man. He was so great there. It's just
the Bulls
fire
are
Horford.
Just move on to the chaos. Like, that. The Bulls are the franchise embodiment of anything is possible, and J.R. Smith just excitedly throwing his hands in the air. They just do things, and you hope for the best, and you just see what goes on, and you may not be in your right mind for any of the decision-making process, but you got a lot of hope. I hate that team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is the perfect description of the Bulls. That's not even... Yeah, that's true. Oh, God.
This Timberwolves conversation got out of whack there for a second.
that's the Timberwolves for you. Let's move on to the Utah Jazz, though, because I think we've been with enough sad teams now that we can go back to happy for a minute, and then we'll go back to Portland. So,
which
one more sad one. But the Jazz, Morton, I'm going to throw this to you first, because you were all over Donovan Mitchell even before the draft, as our listeners are well aware. You projected big things for him. I don't know, even in your rosy outlook for him, you couldn't have expected how quickly he hit the ground running. And
this where I'm going to lie and say, of course I did?
Yeah, right. Probably.
All right.
But now he's coming off he was already the number one option, rookie of the year runner up. What do you expect for him in year two?
First 25-point season of his career, first of many.
Wow.
He's that good.
Lord.
He's that good.
I love Donovan Mitchell, but you don't see any potential regression. Zero. You see that.
I look at that team.
He came out with 24-4
right.
as a rookie in the West.
Yep.
Love Donovan Mitchell. Like, I was as high on him as you were coming out of college.
Yeah, you were.
I was so high on him. But this is absurd. People don't do this. Like, I just have to believe there's some regression here. I don't see him literally, like, getting better. It's so hard to wrap my head around it.
Well, here's the thing, though. When you look at that Utah roster, like, where else is that offense going to come from? Like, I think he's going to be forced to score 25 a game. Like, Joe Ingles? Hey, Joe Ingles, go get me 20. Nightly.
No Joe Ingles slander on this. I will not stand
it. I love him, but he's not a high-volume guy. Like, Joe Ingles I can't even say he's my son. He's, like, my age, but you know what I mean. Like, he's terrific, but, like, where's that offensive punch going to come from? It's not going to come from Dante Exum. It's not going to come from Ricky Rubio. It's not, like, Derek Favors is not going to develop into, like, a 19-point scorer all of a sudden. Like... Yeah, what are you putting your hopes in? Like, Grayson Allen in year one? Not happening. Mm-mm. I mean, Donovan Mitchell is probably going to have to average 25, 26 points next season already. The thing with me is, like, this dude is just ready to become that fully-fledged superstar, I think. I mean, he has it written all over him. So I'm looking at a guy who's just going to make these steady improvements to his game on a year-by-year basis. Like, statistically, he may be somewhat close to what you end up with, and not like raw statistics, but in his defensive impact is going to be greater. I mean, look, he got thrown into the fire last season, averaging 17 shots a game, being the number one option. Like, he's so much better defensively than you know, people make him out to be. Look at what he did at Louisville. He was ridiculous. Like, there's no way that he is not a better defender than what he showed last year, which is a weird situation. So he's going to steadily make these climbs. He's going to prove that, oh, he's actually one of the best two-way players in the NBA at some point. He's going to prove that, oh, he's actually a better rebounder than what he showed, because, hey, hello Rudy Gobert, who was going to take a shit ton of rebounds away. Like, he's just going to prove all these things wrong. And he's going to do it on a year-to-year basis. This year is just, you know, the second year for him having to come out and put up huge numbers until he kind of settles into, like, a more permanent role. We see that a lot from players, like, coming out of fire and then realizing, oh, you know, I can scale it back a little bit. I can pick my spots a little bit more. Like, the team gets better. More people want to sign with them because of him at some point. And then, you know, you have the shared responsibility of scoring the basketball. But that responsibility isn't there this year. That is his responsibility. So I wouldn't be surprised if he had a few 50 games as well. Wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised about that either. But still, I mean, you're asking a dude who is 21, 22, yeah. 21.
22.
Yeah, 22. He to take on just this absurd scoring load, yeah, in the toughest division in basketball and the toughest conference. Mm-hmm. Like, there is a way that he does end up regressing just because shots don't fall in the same way. You know, you don't, yep, get as hot. They had a ridiculous second half. They went on like a 13-game winning streak. Like, yeah, what did. If those breaks don't happen? Like, I the Western Conference this year, it's such a small margin of error. Like, you have one thing go wrong, you fall from the 3 seed to the 10 seed. Like, that. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. That it worries me. And for a guy that young to take on that kind of pressure, he didn't have the pressure last year. That was a happy surprise. And suddenly now, he is looked, yeah, at as a guy that has to be a 23-5-5 at 22 in his second year in the Northwest. Yeah. I'm nervous. I'm skeptical.
I get that. I agree with you. Like, they should have done a better job of acquiring some sort of offensive scoring punch for him. They did. Like, when they traded Rodney Hood, they also traded away, at that point at least, 17 points a game. Like, yeah, he was at 16.8, I think, before the Cleveland trade, and then he went into the tank or something. I don't know what the hell happened there. But, yeah, I mean, those numbers have not been replicated. Like, Jay Crowder is not going to come in and, hey guys, I'm going to carry us to win, you know, tonight. I'm going to get you 27. Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. So who's that guy? Who's that second guy? Like, Rudy Gobert might actually be the second leading scorer this year.
That'd be bad.
Yeah.
I love Rudy, but that would be bad.
Yeah. It would be. Like, I have wet dreams about Nikola Mirotic next to
yeah.
Yeah, to Donnie. I think that makes a lot of sense, but
that's a dream.
I just don't. Right, I don't think the Pelicans are gonna go for that in any capacity. But they need that type of player, like a proper stretch four man that he can play off of a little bit, a kind of a release valve player. They would really benefit greatly from that, and Mitchell in particular.
Yeah, yeah, it's gonna be really interesting to see. I mean, that's the question, right? It's kind of the same thing with OKC, but even possibly to a greater extent is like, Utah is going to have a top three defense, if not the number one overall defense. Where do you manufacture those points outside of Mitchell?
Right.
They'll have to win a lot of close games with a young team. Like, that's a tall order.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, though, you know, they re-signed Dante Exum to a three-year, $33 million deal, I want to say. You know, we just haven't seen that much from him because he's been hurt so much. But, like, in the playoffs, we saw he was really good against James Harden, yes, defensively, especially. Like, could he be that X factor for them as, like, you know, just another great defender, but also a potential source of offense either off the bench or, I mean, at some point, could he even supplant Ricky Rubio?
I think so. I'm there. I've also been a big Dante Exum stan for a long time. I think all of these injuries he's had to go through are going to help him with the mental part of this game. He's not going to be as far away as he has been for the past few years. He is going to understand the nuances of playing point guard and being a side pick and roll creator alongside Donovan Mitchell that he has not known before. I believe that Dante Exum could be that X factor as long as he can hit any kind of shots. If he has to just make you think about the fact that he could pull up it's going to completely change the fundamental basics of their team. Like, mm-hmm. he is a guy who can be that X factor. He can be that secondary creator. He can find open shots for guys. He has skip passes with both hands. He's able to get to the rim and use his length. And defensively, the dude is a stud. I'm all in on him defensively. I think that he is one of the better point guard defenders in the NBA already. That's where I'm at with him.
Yeah, I buy it too. I mean,
he's just so good defensively.
Yeah, he's 6'6". I mean, he's got a ridiculously long
7'1" wingspan. Yeah.
Yeah, like he's got the tools there. It's just he hasn't been able to stay healthy. So if he can, I mean, he seems like the type of player who we're going to be talking about. You know, if he stays healthy, kind of like this breakout potential player. And, you know,
that Mike Conley type.
Yeah, yeah.
Guy that comes in really, really late. It just takes a while to learn the position. He was too young when he came into the league.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I will say, you know, having, you know, he played only 24 games, Dante, last season, including playoffs, like 14 in the regular, 10 in the playoffs. And, oh, it's just, I kind of feel bad for him that so much pressure has been building on him now for that great playoff run and the way that he guarded Harden because, you know, he had fresh legs. Like, he played just 14 games in the regular season. So if he's coming in next year, plays all 82 or 75 or like a good chunk and then is kind of fatigued in the playoff, he is going to be crapped on big time, which isn't fair to him because he needs a chance to get back properly. So I'm still patient with him. And I want to be patient with him for a little bit longer. It's just me saying I think it's unfair if we deem the following season as this sort of idea that, oh, this is the guy he's going to be from here on out. Like, I want to give him more than just this coming season. I want to give him at least a couple more to see what he's got in him. But the defense is definitely intriguing. I will point to his rookie season as well when he started. He actually hit more threes than I thought he would coming in. Like, he hit 83. It was only on 31%, but, like, it was fine. Granted, if I'm not mistaken, they were wide open. But still, just having that capacity of being able to hit that three ball, that's going to take him a long way if he can prove that he has that consistency to his game. We'll see. I mean, getting a whole fresh offseason without injuries, that's going to be key for him. And like right now, he's healthy, right? I haven't heard of anything.
Yeah, no, he's been playing at the Rico Hines run at UCLA, and his shot mechanics and his gather into his shot are significantly quicker. Like, he's nice. Put work in. He has put work in on his shot.
Right. I was just curious because I hadn't read anything about him, like, being, you know, injured during the summer or whatnot. So this would be one of the – yeah, how many offseason has he had, like, healthy? Not many.
Oh, this is the second one, and the first one was his rookie year.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the rookie year offseason is never an offseason. No, that's just trying to figure out what the NBA is like. So that's different for guys. This is his first time he's actually got to work on his game. Yeah.
Then he's going to come in much improved. What I'm really hoping is, like, I talked about the lack of scoring punch. Like, maybe Dante is that guy. Like, if he comes in next year and you know, drops just 14 a game, that's going to be huge.
Yeah.
Especially if he's breaking down defenses and scrambling guys, he could really be that guy.
Right.
I'm also wondering, Grayson Allen to me seems like another... I mean, again, not like not a huge source of offense, but to me, Donovan Mitchell is going to be a great both on-court and off-court mentor for him, I think. And I just feel like he's going to come in and like fill the role they wanted Alec Burks to fill over the last couple of years. Just like spot up, hit a couple threes, play some annoying defense. You know, again, he's not going to play 35 minutes a game, but in that system, I could easily see him just giving them enough that like that could swing a couple games their way this year.
Aren't you worried about his off-court antics, though? Like, I'm worried that like this team is so close, and they have this chemistry about them that allows this to work in the way that it does. Mm-hmm. Grayson Allen is the antithesis to that. Like, I just don't know about how that's going to work at all. It's a good thing he's in Salt Lake City because that might not blow over the same way that it would in bigger markets, but I'm not there with Grayson Allen. I was very low on him in the draft process. He is not a guy who uses his athleticism very well. He does not attempt to play any off-ball defense. He does not attempt to play any off-ball offense. The dude is not my guy at all. If you're hoping that he gives you any kind of shot creation or three-point shooting, then it could be a long year because you need to find it elsewhere. I'm not there with Grayson Allen yet at all.
Mort, what about you?
No, I'm more there than TJ is.
Yeah. I'm out, but, yes. He was like, yeah, 5 on my big board. Like, I'm out.
That's fair. I mean, here's where I stand on him. I think he plays hard. I think he is routinely a hard worker, and I think him getting into the NBA, especially under Quinn Snyder, is going to change some of his habits a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think if he can just tunnel his very passionate play to the more positive side, that is going to change a lot because, like TJ alluded to, like he does weird stuff because he just has these, he gets these brain farts very frequently and he reacts emotionally. So if he can sort of be guided into a place where, okay, if this happens, you need to punish whoever did that to you in a different way, and you need to actually use that to your advantage instead of actually using it to your disadvantage, that's going to be huge. I agree with the fact that he doesn't utilize his athleticism to the point where what he could, but I think that's where the NBA can come in and really help him, because that is just a place where we have some of the greatest athletes in the world.
Yeah.
And I think he'll be forced on a regular day-to-day, you know, training regimen, like to just be aware of how he uses his body. Like, oh, okay, I could get by this guy easily in college. Well, now I'm up against Jay Crowder in practice. I can't, because that guy's a fucking tank. So how do I use my first step? How do I use my athleticism? How do I use my body to actually find this way of getting around him? I think that is going to improve a lot as the years come by. I think he's going to be very much like J.J. Redick. And so remember how much J.J. just struggled in the first couple of years in the league? Like, mm-hmm. A lot of people were like, is he even an NBA player? And now he's like an instrumental part of an NBA roster. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying he's got J.J. Redick's ceiling, because the Redick ceiling, as it turned out, was actually pretty damn high.
The shot diversification is not there yet in terms of what J.J. can do.
Absolutely. It's just like the career arc of having him like initially not be a big-time player, but eventually down the line in a couple of years, he could be a very decent rotational player. I don't think he's ever going to be like a full-time starter or anything.
Yeah,
I think he's going to be, but he could be a very nice rotation player, like maybe the 7th or 8th man who just runs out of like, closes out of rotation, which is fine. Like if he can hit shots and he can use his body and move, that's fine. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
You talk
to be clear,
about his passion. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, like, I'm not saying he's going to be a 35 minute a game guy. I just that's the best case scenario. What Mort just laid out is the best case scenario I imagine for him. Like, if he is your 8th man, that's all you need from him.
Right. Right. He was the 20th third pick.
Do you think he's more passion or do you think he's a showman? Because I swear, I think he just likes to steer. Because I don't think that it's as much that he cares so deeply about the game as much as he cares about people talking about the way he plays the game.
Mm.
That's a good question. I think that can change depending on both matchups and how you feel. Like, I don't think you feel the same thing all the time, and I do think he has an edge and an ego to him that on occasion will show itself. Absolutely. But I don't think you get this far without having a great passion for the game, especially, you know, being that size, you know. I mean, it's one thing if you're like 6'11 and athletic, whereas, like, just take the Eddie Curry example, a guy who really didn't care about basketball becoming the 4th pick just because, hey, I'm big and I'm athletic, I can get into the NBA just by, you know, dunking a basketball. Like, you have to have a certain, passion for the game if you're going to succeed at this level. But yeah, you're absolutely right. On occasion, he would be a very obnoxious showman, and that will present itself on occasion. Here's the great part about that, though. If he does that in Utah at a home game, his own crowd will let him know. Because Utah, they are definitely hardcore fundamentalists when it comes to basketball. Mm-hmm. They like their pick and roll separate.
Fundamentalist? Yeah. Is that a thing?
Yeah. All right. Poor wording. You know what I mean. But yeah, like he'll get the proper NBA education there. Like he will. I think that's one of the better places he could have landed. Like, imagine him being drafted by the Lakers and into the LeBron James freak show right now. Like that,
LeBron
just
would
that
have not allowed that to happen.
Right?
Could you imagine Ted Cruz at their practices together?
Oh God!
that wouldn't work. That would not work.
You're right.
Yeah.
But I think I definitely think there is some upside to Grayson Allen. It's just, I think it's also fair to like point out that upside may never be realized. Like, there's definitely a possibility in a world where that happens. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's close things out now with the Portland Trailblazers.
Oh,
Yeah, a really interesting team. You know, they were a 3 seed last year, but obviously they were also 3 games away from missing the playoffs. It was just a really tightly bunched Western Conference. The Pelicans then swept them, which, again, you wonder if that should have prompted them to consider making some major moves. Instead, they really just signed a couple of fringe guys, or not fringe guys, but just swapped out some bench depth. They lost Pat Connaughton. They lost Ed Davis. They bring in Seth Curry, Nick Stauskas. So TJ, since you said you've got a lot of thoughts on them, take the floor. What do you think? What do you think the Blazers should do this year? Do you think it's time for them to really consider blowing up that Dame and CJ backcourt? Or do you think there's enough upside here? You can hope Zach Collins develops. You can hope Seth Curry's really good. He's one of Mort and I. He's our adopted son. So we'll have no Seth Curry slander on this podcast. But
oh, I love Seth Curry. Don't worry.
Okay, good. Good. but like, what do you think they have the upside that they should keep this together, run the same core back, or do you think they really need to start considering making some bigger moves in terms of blowing up their roster?
I think that they need to blow up their roster, and I don't think they will. I don't, because Portland loves this team. They absolutely adore the guys that they have. I think that Dame and CJ have a very real limit on them. I think last year's defensive numbers was a lot more to do with the scheduling process and the fact that teams just weren't very good against them for random stretches. More so than that, they grew into this top 15 defense. I don't believe that. Everything broke right for them last year. Everything did, and like you said, they were 3 games away from just still missing the playoffs. I don't think that they would have the best player in most playoff settings in the Western Conference. I think Damian Lillard needs somebody else around him. They need a wing. They need a Jimmy Butler type. Mm-hmm. They don't have the pieces. They just don't have the pieces, if you ask me.
Yeah.
There's no way to fix it.
Right. So that's what's tough, is you've got a lot of guys on just such awful contracts. Evan Turner, Myers Leonard. Yeah. I mean, Nurkic's contract is fine. Like, it's, you know, for 4 years, $48 million, it's really not bad. And to me, that's the one guy where if you don't want to blow up Dame and CJ, and, you know, apparently they seem really high on Zach Collins. Like, they do think he could develop into that third piece. So maybe Nurkic is the guy you flip to open up that starting five spot for Collins. And then also, hopefully, I agree, like, wing is where they need the most help. Like, New Orleans has perhaps the worst wing rotation in the league, and they couldn't take advantage of that in the playoffs, which is a huge concern. Like, that's how you beat New Orleans, is just abuse them for starting, like, Solomon Effin' Hill, you know? And they couldn't do it because Evan Turner was terrible, and Mo Harkless really struggled last year. Like, Aminu played well, but Lillard just struggled so much in that series that they were screwed either way. So they're the ones where I'm thinking, you know, you've got, well, I'll just throw this one out there. Andrew Wiggins.
And it's been brought up, but the money is hard to make it work. They'd have to move, like, Myers Leonard and Nurkic and still a little bit of money and then still create a package to get him. That's right.
What about Evan Turner? Evan Turner, Myers Leonard. Does that...
Why would you take that deal if you're Minnesota? What does that do for you in any capacity?
Get you out of, like, that horrible deal a little bit earlier, I guess.
That means you're conceding on the year. Like, you're just giving up on it with Jimmy Butler and Towns without his extension still. Like, that. Like, there's no way back from this. And that's my biggest issue with them, is that they're just in this no man's land, hoping that Damian Lillard gets really hot in a playoff setting and wins you a series, right? Like, that's all you're really going to get out of this roster. And Zach Collins, what's the big upside with him? What can he turn into? Can he be a shot-blocking stretch big? Like, can he be a Serge Ibaka? I don't think so. Like, he doesn't have any playmaking. He's not a big guy that can handle the ball. You're not going to give the ball in the high post and tell him to create. He's not just a guy that can go up and dunk everything in sight. I don't necessarily know what the upside is there. So, for me, my biggest thing is there's a cap. There's a hard, hard, hard cap onto how good this team can be, and everything broke right for them last year. They were a significantly better defensive team. They didn't get hurt. Damian Lillard was on fire for half of the year. CJ McCollum grew into a more diverse player, and it still didn't work. And I just I don't know where you're going to find the fixes out there. Like, this is going to take some wizardry from that front office to be able to build this team into somebody, into something that can grow into something better than it currently is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the Wiggins one is, like, the extreme outlier example where it's just, like, if Minnesota is just so desperate to get out. Yeah. But, like, you know, I'm thinking of a guy, like, Kent Bazemore is readily available, it seems. Now, again, yeah, it's,
and
like,
I think he would help.
Yeah, but again, you're right. It's like, why would Atlanta say yes to Evan Turner for Kent Bazemore? They probably would not. But I'm thinking, like,
Nick Batum, like you mentioned.
Is, you know, because he, I think salary cap space just doesn't matter for this team. Like, they're not going to have cap space this year or next year. And then Dame and CJ are signed for one more year after that. And you're like, you have four players under contract in 2020. And you have, like, a projected $36 million in space just in terms of, like, not counting any non-guaranteed stuff. So they're not going to be able to spend their way out of this. They tried that in 2016. It failed. So I think you can look toward kind of what Houston did with Ryan Anderson or what OKC did with Carmelo. You try to you take bad money back for these guys, and maybe you send a prospect out or get a prospect back or send a draft pick out, get a draft pick back. Try to get two swings instead of one. But like a Kent Bazemore or an Evan Fournier, I mean, maybe Orlando is just like, screw it, we can't have Aaron Gordon playing the three. Maybe they try to offload him.
That would be a very magic thing to do.
it would be, right?
Yeah.
But I, like, there are enough guys out there that I think you can find a deal potentially. And so, again, that goes back to my whole, like, do you blow Dame and CJ up? I think there is a limited ceiling for that combination. But I think you wait. I don't think you sell CJ McCollum for, you know, like, he is a quarter. You don't trade him for two dimes and a nickel. Like, you try to get...
you wait till the draft.
Yeah. That's what you try to get. Yeah, you try to get a star player. Like, you want a star for a star, basically. Like, you want a Jimmy Butler. And maybe that blows up, and then you're forced to rebuild or whatever. But, like, you're not... Portland's... unless you hit on a mid-first-round pick, like, unless you get a Giannis or a Kawhi in the draft, they're going to otherwise be banking on internal improvement, which is not going to work because every other team in the West got significantly better this year.
Yep, even the Suns got significantly better from where they were at. Like, everybody got better in the West. Mm. The thing that's weird for me about Portland is that all the guys that they could send out in trades, they're not expiring. They don't have 1 year left. They don't have a non-guaranteed year. They're three years, 4 years, 2 years. You're not just taking on the money for that year. You're stuck with it.
Yeah.
And that's a very difficult thing for any other team to stomach, especially considering the cap landscape of where things are right now. That could change, obviously. There should be another $8 million or whatever it is in the cap next year, but you just don't know. And teams now see how valuable keeping your open cap space is. And I don't know a team that would be willing to trade for Myers Leonard or an Evan Turner or a Yusef Nurkic for that type of money, considering that you're stuck with it if it doesn't work, which is why I'm so low on them. Like, I just genuinely am. If they have any regression, they're just not a playoff team. I don't have them as a playoff team next year. I have them and Minnesota falling out.
Yeah, I don't have them as a playoff team either. But do you have any thoughts on where Portland goes?
I just like that they finally took a gamble on Cameron Oliver, who I've been surprised did not get an NBA job. Yes. Like, that guy from Nevada, like, he's good. He is. I mean, he could kind of be one of those, you know, Quinn Cook type players who comes into the league and just, like, makes it rain, and people are like, oh, that actually makes sense. Like, Brian and I had an episode a couple months back where we ended up talking about, like, the low-value guys, like the people in the G League and stuff like that. Like, guys who come in from you know, non-NBA programs and just actually does well enough and should replace some of the older, more known names who come in and are signed on name only instead of ability. And I think Portland would actually be one of those teams that should look more into that, maybe just scour the G League for a wing. Like, at what point, I mean, could it get any worse from a wing perspective? I mean, not really. And, like, I actually like their offseason because I like Gary Trent Jr. I love Seth Curry. I love those guys. The thing is, like Gary Trent, there's no way he's big enough to play small forward defensively. Like he's a pure shooting guard. And this the same with Seth Curry. So they they bolstered their depth for like the guard spot specifically. That did not change anything for their wing positions, which is a problem. So yeah, they need to come in and find a way, maybe just facilitate like a consolidation trade would be good for them if that could, you know, if they could fiddle their way to it. I'm still high on the whole James Johnson idea if that proved, you know, feasible.
Oh, I like that. I do like that.
I would love him there. Like he's because he's got 3 years left, so maybe Miami would be like, oh yeah, we gave 4 year deals to basically everyone on the roster and their grandmas. Maybe we should try to actually save money on one of these deals and then trade James Johnson for, I don't know, Evan Turner and a protected pick or something. I don't know. Something like that made sense. Like, I'm still in love with that idea. But Brian, like you mentioned Nick Batum as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they went that route where they took on more money because the cap doesn't matter for him, I would go into that because at least it would be proactive. Like, they wouldn't just blow it up and say, hey, fuck it, we're tanking. I would actually love that approach by him. Like, going, you know what, let's be proactive for a change because we have Dame, we have CJ. Let's see if we can at least move the needle somewhat. And hey, look, if it doesn't work, like, yeah, you can blow it up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's you can always blow it up. That's kind of the luxury of this team is just that at any given point, they can blow it up whenever they want to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They should not have traded Allen Crabbe. That's what really hurt them. They need him. Like, he would have provided the spacing, the switchability, the ability to play the three spot and attack closeouts. And that could be a guy if Brooklyn struggles a little bit and isn't in the playoff picture that they could reacquire. Yeah. That wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We talked about that at length on this podcast because it was a lot of money for Allen Crabbe when they matched. Mm-hmm. And then they flipped him a year later.
Right.
But I was like, they should just have stuck with the Crabbe signing and just not signed Evan Turner. Like, that would have been huge. Yeah. Like, just replace Allen Crabbe or Evan Turner with Allen Crabbe right now, and that team is, like, a lot better.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure it's less money for Crabbe, right?
It's a little slightly more.
It's slightly more. Crabbe signed for 75, and Evan Turner signed for 70.
Yeah. But I'm wondering about a guy, you know, another guy I'm thinking for in terms of wings. You know, you got to think of, like, these guys who are falling out of favor. Norman Powell in Toronto, like, didn't play that much last year. He could be...
He's good.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know what... Again, it comes down to, like, what Toronto would want. Maybe they want... Do they want a Yusuf Nurkic? Probably not. Do they want an Evan Turner? No. Do they want, like, Mo Harkless, maybe? I don't know.
But Norman Powell, he's more like a 2, though. He's, like, 6'4". I think they need someone with a little bit
more size. But he's long, too.
He is. No, he absolutely long, and he can move, and he can shoot. Like, he would definitely solve a lot of it. But I would like a guy who, much like Alvaro Gamino, can switch between both forward spots. Because it's not just the 3 spot where they're missing something. Like, they could use an upgrade at the 4. And I'm saying this with confidence in both Zach Collins and Caleb Swanigan. I kind of think both of them are more than people making them out to be. But I don't think they're difference makers. I don't think they're going to be stars. So I would like to see them get a little bit more depth at those both spots. So they should just be open-minded to basically every phone call coming in.
Yeah. Like, yes, they should that's the right way to phrase it.
Right. Yeah. If we hear any report this season about, you know, the Portland just saying, well, we're not taking calls, then yeah, flame away.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree.
I do love Penny, by the way, though. Penny Simons over here. I love that kid.
Andrew Simons. Absolutely.
We haven't even talked about him yet. Sorry. Yeah. I still call him Penny.
I love the drafting too because I thought it was a ballsy move because where they are, like they didn't have a whole lot of data on him, but they had him in for 2 workouts. I remember this and they were just like, oh, they fell in love with him in the first workout and then they had to confirm it in the second one. It was like, it's the same thing. The thing with him, though, it's the same thing with Seth Curry. Like, he plays the 1 and 2. Like, they have so much depth at those spots where you just go, did you just blow your whole wad on the guard spots and then leave nothing for, like, the really necessary positions? Like, yeah.
Isn't he, like, 6'3 at 18, though? Like, he still has some room to grow.
Yeah, like, potentially he could be a legit wing.
He could be a 6'6 guy, but in time for sure, I think.
Yeah, and long wingspan, all that. Yeah. And Gary Trent, like, even though he's a pure 2 guard, he's like 6'6", but I don't think his Yeah, his wingspan, was that 7 feet? No, a little less,
I remember
right?
it being like 6'9", 6'10". Like, it was shorter. Like, that was one of his
big
knocks.
Oh, okay, a little shorter, yeah.
And he's got a little bit of tunnel vision, too. Like, he gets the ball and shooters and just kind of does what he does and doesn't see anything else outside of his vision.
Right, and he doesn't move very well defensively. No, he doesn't. Least, which is why I don't want to move him up a slot. Whereas Anthony Simons, like, again, I haven't watched him play games because he didn't play college last year. So we'll see. If Simons moves tremendously and if he grows and can become that 2-3 type of guy, that could change their entire outlook.
Mm. Yeah, I totally agree.
I just like that Schroeder's is a verb now. That's fantastic.
Started on the right foot with that one.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up, guys. So, TJ, thank you again for coming on. Remind our listeners one more time where they can find your work, where they can find you on Twitter, all that good stuff.
Yeah, milehighsports.com. Pretty much everything Nuggets goes through me over there. And then you can follow me on Twitter at TJ McBride NBA.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you again for joining us. It was a lot of fun.
Of course.
Please, in the meantime, give us a follow as well on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio. We're also on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at Almighty Casts. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined by Morten Jensen and TJ McBride. Have a good one, guys.
You too, Brian. I'm going to go back to playing Spider-Man right now.
Yeah, I'm literally stopping this recording just to do that right now.
Yeah.
Enjoy.